This is Mary Lewis at A Tiny Homestead, the podcast comprised entirely of conversations with homesteaders, cottage food producers, and crafters. Today I'm talking with Emily at Kaiser Family Homestead, LLC. Good morning, Emily. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am elated. It is finally snowing here when it's light out and I can see it snowing because I'm in Minnesota and Minnesota has been in a snow drought for months.
You know, so have we. We're just getting our nice first dusting, too. We're expecting like 8 inches this week, so that requires a lot of prep on the homestead, obviously.
Oh, yeah. We got a dusting, I don't know, a week ago, but I didn't actually see it fall. It fell overnight.
And oh, sure.
For me, not seeing it snow is just not okay. I want to actually see it snow. So I'm looking out my bedroom window, which is where my desk is, which is where my quote unquote office is set up. And I can see flakes coming down. It's just beautiful. I'm so excited. So tell me about yourself and Kaiser Family Homestead LLC.
Well, I have two little boys, ages 5 and about 18 months.
Okay.
I live with my high school sweetheart. We met when we started high school at age 13, and we've been together ever since. We got married a few years ago and decided that, you know, we wanted to start this little homestead life. You know, growing up, I had chickens. He didn't really have any farm animals, so this is rather new territory to us as we're venturing into pigs and sheep and eventually cattle and all this jazz. We just have a little 5-acre parcel that we're trying to do as much as we can on.
Nice. Okay, so how long ago was high school for you?
Not too long ago. I'm 25. We graduated about 5-6 years ago now. 6 years ago.
Okay, and so you're a baby. I'm 54. My kids are all grown. Like my youngest is 22 and my oldest is 34. So you're right in where my kids are. So
yeah, I get that a lot. I've actually just met a nice new friend the other day. And when she pulled in my driveway, she was just coming to, you know, get some chickens and stuff. And she goes, "Oh my gosh, you're my age." Because, you know, she's gotten the same reactions so often. You know, they just don't expect people our age to be, you know, starting this lifestyle, I guess.
I'm really excited that you are 25 because a lot of the people that I talk to are at least in their mid to late 30s and up. And so talking to the young bloods who are just starting this is kind of great. So I did my homework. I went and looked at your Facebook page. You are doing all the things. And I thought, how is she keeping up? Because I knew you had kids. And then you just said you're 25. And I was like, oh, boundless energy of 25. That's how you're keeping up.
Yeah. Yep. Lose my mind a little bit some days with two rambunctious little boys, but it definitely helps me keep my wits. We've got 6 sheep. We do the Katahdin hair sheep, and we have 3 Idaho pasture pigs. Those are just kind of our breeders. They're all expecting to kid and well, lamb, I guess I should say. We used to have goats, so I'm kind of used to that mindset of lingo. But we decided that, you know, goats were fun until we got sheep, and then we're like, oh my goodness, sheep are so much cooler. Goats are annoying.
Why are sheep cooler? Is it because they're more laid back?
Oh my goodness, yes, they're so just, I mean, like, I loved the energy of the goats, but you know, if you forgot to latch the gate, the goats were like standing up on your kitchen window, you know, where the sheep, they just stand there and go, "Excuse me, you forgot to close the gate." Yeah.
Yep. I have always said, and people might get mad at me for saying this, but I'm going to say it. Goats are full of crazy, and lambs and sheep are just kind of dumb. They're laid back. They're calm.
They really are.
By much that I can see, that I can tell.
Yeah, they're so low maintenance.
I don't want sheep because they're kind of dumb. And my husband's like, they're not different than goats. And I'm like, no, yes, they are. They're very different than goats.
Yes, they definitely have a much different, more mellow mentality. And that just, you know, brings me a little more peace to the homestead. You know, the goats were chaotic in a fun way, but, you know, we just had them for dairy, and I work full time as well. So it was just a lot trying to keep up with the milking schedule. And yeah, we just decided that, you know, goats weren't for us.
It's really funny that you're saying all this. I just had a real deep dive conversation with a lady who raises Nigerian goats. And in probably the middle of the recording, I said, so anyone who's ever had goats or knows someone who has goats, they know that goats are mischievous and will eat anything. And she was like, not my goats. And I said, really? She said, no. She said, my goats, they don't eat everything. They taste everything. And, oh, and they spit it out if they don't like it. And so there was this whole, like, revelatory thing that happened with me. I was like, you know, I lived my whole life thinking that goats eat everything, and now I know better. And we just laughed. It was very funny.
Yeah, I suppose it probably does depend on the breed. Uh-huh. The ones I had, they definitely like to eat anything they can get their little tiny uh-huh. teeth on.
Yeah. Okay, so why? I don't know how to ask this. I do this every time. I'm like, I have all kinds of questions, and then I'm like, how do I ask the question so it makes sense? How did you decide you wanted to do this? Was it just because you grew up and had chickens and you were like, this seems like a great thing to start with and then keep going? Or how did this happen?
Well, I mean, we had chickens when I was younger. And then, you know, as I got into teenagers, we, you know, the flock dwindled, and then it got to a point where we only had one chicken. We had this Leghorn. She lived to be 15 years old, and she was just laying an egg every day until she died. It was the craziest wow. thing. I know. I was so impressed. And, you know, after that, we just kind of missed chickens, you know, and horses and stuff like that. But we just kind of got out of livestock as I was graduating, and my sister was, you know, starting to progress in school herself. And, you know, life just got crazy. I don't, you know, we never had, you know, sheep and all that crazy stuff. And, you know, the horses always kept the pasture mowed and all. And then my parents decided that they wanted to downsize, and they were going to sell the little farm here. And I just didn't want to see it go out on the market. And, you know, my kids were getting a little bigger. So we decided that we were going to then buy my childhood home from my parents and utilize it a little differently, you know. And that's when we introduced the sheep and the pigs and stuff out to the pasture, which is just kind of cool to see life out there again. You know, there's a pond, so we got a bunch of ducks and geese. And, you know, it's just, there's a sense of peace and joy of just watching little critters frolic, you know.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah.
So every time we saw, like, I don't want to say a blank space on the property, but, you know, an opportunity for something that could further our journey that we had the ability to let flourish, we did.
Yeah, no, that makes all the sense in the world. And I feel like people who do what you're doing and what we're trying to do here, we're trying to do the same thing, but we're not doing livestock. We have chickens, of course, but ours is more gardening than livestock. I feel like the people who choose to do this do it for a specific reason, and it doesn't really matter what the reason is, but it's always interesting to hear the different reasons. Our reason was because we lived in town for 20 years, very close to our neighbors, and we were fortunate to have great neighbors. But I grew up in a small town. My parents had a home on an acre of wooded land, and every lot on the block they bought their home on had an acre. So you could sort of see your neighbors through the trees, but they weren't right there. And if they yelled real loud, you could hear them yell, but they weren't, you couldn't just hear their conversations in the yard next door.
Yes.
And so growing up in the middle of pine trees in Maine, where it was quiet, and then living in a small town in the Midwest with one house next to ours that we could literally stand between our houses and touch, there was like 3.5 feet between the two outside walls. And then our other neighbor was 15, 20 feet away. We just needed to get away. And so 3 years ago, we moved to our 3-acre home in the middle of nowhere. And our nearest neighbor is at least 1/2 mile away. And it's so quiet. I love quiet. Quiet makes me happy.
Oh, I feel you there. My husband grew up in town, like you were just saying, you know, how you could, you know, wave to the next door neighbor's kitchen went from your kitchen window, you know. And he just didn't enjoy that.
We could have
So
full conversations with our neighbor who was 15, 20 feet away through her kitchen window.
Yep, that's exactly how he grew up. And he was just like, I don't want that for our kids. You know, I want them to learn how to be self-sufficient. I want them to, you know, learn more things than even we did growing up, you know. So we're just kind of on a mission to try to learn things ourselves a little bit while the kids are young, so that when they get to be, you know, 10, 12 years old, we can really start teaching them, you know, true life-changing knowledge that they, you know, can use in their entire lives.
Yeah, knowledge that matters.
Exactly. That's why we chose to homeschool too. You know,
Yes.
we tried preschool in a public system, and it wasn't fitting us. You know, we just didn't like the. He was bringing home more germs than he was homework. You know, and it just didn't really work for our lifestyle. So around spring break, we decided to pull him out and start homeschooling, and we've been doing it for little over a year now, and he's loving it.
Good. The one thing that I will tell you about homeschooling is I don't know that it matters whether it's you're producing the curriculum or if you're using an online school with them or however it works for you. We did this with our two youngest boys. And one of the things in Minnesota, I have no idea what the laws are in Michigan, but in Minnesota, to graduate high school, you are required to take pre-cal and trigonometry.
Oh my goodness.
I took pre-cal and trigonometry when I was in high school, and
So did I.
I barely passed it. I mean, I did, but
Same.
by the skin of my teeth. And it's a real problem. If you are not a math person, pre-cal and trig is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
So I personally think it's kind of ridiculous to make kids pass that class to get their diploma. And I'm one person, I'm probably not going to change the law. But with homeschooling in any state, you really want to make sure you check the situation for graduation, for actually getting that high school diploma. And
Oh yeah.
I'm not just telling you, I'm telling anyone who's listening because we didn't
Oh
know.
yes. Yeah, I was homeschooled from, you know, preschool, kindergarten, whatever, up until 8th grade, and then I decided to go to public school for high school for that exact reason. You know,
Okay.
I wanted the opportunities for the you know, the college dual enrollment, you know, classes and all the fancy sciences and crazy maths and stuff that I didn't want to put my mom through, like
Yeah.
trig and all that jazz. So we will probably entertain a similar idea when he gets to that age, but I feel as though it really gave me a lot at a young age. So we just wanted to give that to our kiddos as well. Like right now we have, and I'm a little crazy, I start hatching my chicks and all in, you know, November, December, January, etc. So he is absolutely just loving, you know, getting up in the morning, doing schoolwork, running and checking the incubator as we learn about, you know, chicken life cycles and husbandry and all this. You know, it gives us the opportunity to let him show the animals in the fair and really, you know, be able to dig into the inside knowledge of the farm life and, you know, animals and gardening and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish that we had been in a position to do what you're doing when our four kids were small. But we were not. We didn't have the opportunity until our kids were adults. But we did have chickens at the old house, and we weren't really supposed to because there weren't any actual laws regarding it. It was just if your neighbors complained, it was a complaint-based thing. If the neighbors complained, you had to get rid of them. And so we let the two closest neighbors know that we were getting four chickens and we were putting up a shed in our tiny backyard. And both my friends, neighbors, were like, "That's cool." And I said, "You sure?" And they were like, "Yeah." And then we started giving them eggs and they were really cool with it. So if we didn't use all the eggs, I would be like, "Do you need eggs?" And they're like, "Yeah." So that worked out great. And that was kind of our first tiny little inkling that we would like to be doing what we're doing now.
Sure. Yeah, chickens
And
are definitely a gateway thing.
yeah, absolutely. And it took, you know, I mean, it took us forever to finally get to where we are. But in the meantime, we were growing a garden, we were growing flowers, we were growing chickens, and we weren't having baby chickens because you can't have a rooster in city limits where we used to live. That would have been a problem. But the kids learned about the fact that if you till the dirt and put a seed in and water it and it gets sun, you may be able to eat what comes from that plant come August, you know?
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I remember doing stuff like that, growing the little bean sprouts, watching the roots take place, and so it's just fun, like knowing what I'm going to be teaching him as he grows. There's so many things I'm just so excited to share,
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you're at a really fun point with your kids because five is great. Five, they have so many ideas and so many things to say, and their perspective is brand new.
Yes.
And so, you know, they look at the sky and say, "Why is it blue?" And if you don't know, you Google it. And if you do know, you tell them. And the second you tell them why it's blue, they have 6,000 more questions about how that all works.
Exactly. It's fun.
Yeah, it really is. I kind of miss it a little bit. I mean, I had four kids. When the youngest was a newborn, my next one up was 4 and a half, the next one up was 10, and my daughter was 12. So I have a daughter and three sons. And it was insanity because they were all at different developmental stages. Luckily, the three older ones were tickled to have a baby in the house, and they didn't appreciate it when he cried in the middle of the night. But they were really big helps to me to try to get everything done, and nobody died, and everybody had food. So it was great, but it was insanity for, I think, until the youngest hit about 10. It was crazy. I would wake up at 6 in the morning and I would fall into bed at 11 o'clock at night, maybe get 3 hours of sleep, and then do it again. It was
Preaching to the
not.
choir.
Yeah, I have friends who from that time period who are like, "Remember when we went and did this?" And I'm like, "We no, we did." They're like, "Yeah, remember we took the kids and did this?" And I'm like, "I have no working memory of it because I was a zombie. I was exhausted." So this not having small children is really weird, and I haven't had small children for quite a while, but it's still weird to me that I get up in the morning and I'm like, "Oh, I don't have to change a diaper. I don't have to kiss an owie. I don't have to put a Band-Aid on anybody because there's no one to do that with anymore." So it's just bizarre to me. And instead, I get up and have my coffee and pet my dog and watch the news. And that's really nice. That's all good.
Just means that you did your job right and you're at peace with it.
Worked myself out of a job and I'm not sorry about it. They're all great.
Exactly.
And when I asked you about the time zone in messages earlier, it was funny because my daughter just moved from California. That's new. To Florida, and my son just moved from Arizona to Nebraska. So I don't have any Pacific time or mountain time zones to deal with anymore. Now I have Central time and I have Eastern time because my parents live on the East Coast and now my daughter lives on the East Coast. And I was like, yay, now I'm not 2 hours ahead of the kids.
Yeah, having to time out what time you're calling who. And
yeah.
Oh, I couldn't imagine.
Yeah. So I didn't think that Michigan was Eastern time. And I was like, uh-oh. And I looked it up this morning and I was like, ooh, we might want to find out if she's talking 10 her time or 10 my time.
Oh, yes. So, good thing you said something because I didn't even think about that.
I didn't either. I didn't realize that the cutoff was where it is. But now I know. So anyway, did I see that you have peacocks or you used to have peacocks?
Yes, I do. I have two peacocks. They are just about to be hitting laying age. I'm really hoping for a clutch this year. Super excited about that. Yeah, I got them a couple of years ago and have just been really enjoying them. They're such funny birds. Mm-hmm. They're really, really different than, you know, we always call them our fancy turkeys, but they are not like turkeys at all.
Your fancy turkeys. I love it.
Oh, yes. They're really funny birds. And they have such a personality. And the male, we call him Javi, he hates, I wouldn't say he hates my mom, but he knows that my mom hates him. So he likes to mess with her. You know, he'll like walk up to her and poof. You know, just to freak her out. And they're just, they're funny, personable little birds.
Mm-hmm. And they're beautiful. I love them.
Yes.
I think they're so pretty.
Yeah, it's true. And they say, you know, that their tails get better every year. You know, he just gets more and more beautiful. And they have a life expectancy of like 30 years in, you know, safe domestic situations. So I'm really hoping for a long, long life with him. We're always joking about how we're going to have the peacock after the kids are, you know, graduated and moved out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because he's just a biddy and his tail is gorgeous. Everybody's always jealous because he seems to be on like a different setting than every other peacock. You know, everybody around me, their peacocks are all bald. Mine has a beautiful tail. You know, he's just like off season a little bit when it comes to his plumage. So it's funny.
Yeah, I was going to say they must molt like chickens do.
Yep. He drops his tail twice a year and it comes back more beautiful every time. I just have a whole vase of peacock feathers now.
Yeah.
I was running around collecting them.
Do you do anything with them?
You know, I haven't yet. Somebody made me some coasters and earrings and stuff out of them, but I personally just use them as decor. I have them hanging all over my house just because I like looking at them.
Yeah, they're gorgeous. And not everyone has peacocks to get peacock feathers from. So you're blessed, I guess.
Yep, they're a fun bird.
So you said you guys have hair sheep. Do you have wool sheep too?
I have one just because she was my very first sheep. She was kind of our trial sheep to see if we liked them. And then we just loved them. I bought her and her two babies from a local farmer. And, you know, we raised them up and found them new homes as we, you know, transitioned our flock to this new breed that we just liked a little more for a few reasons. But we just couldn't part with her. We call her Rose, and she's just snuggled her way into our hearts as this big, fluffy. I mean, the hair sheep are very fluffy in the winter, too. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, we just, you're going to have to shear one sheep every year now.
Yeah, instead of a bunch. I actually had a conversation already with someone about hair sheep, and I think that podcast got posted. But not everyone knows what hair sheep are. Feel free to tell, or I can. It's up to you.
Well, I mean, I'm relatively new to sheep still. Like I said, this is a a new endeavor I'm just embarking on with this homestead. And they're very easy keepers, in my opinion. We have very little problems with them. And they, I mean, I know not a lot of people like the thought of eating lamb and stuff, but as a hair sheep. They don't produce fiber. They are kind of a meat breed. And they are huge. My ram is absolutely massive. We always are joking that he looks like a small Angus bull. And our vet is like a little intimidated by him because he's just massive. But he's so sweet.
Now,
And they're just.
the hair sheep don't have horns, right?
No.
No. Okay. Are there sheep that have horns? Because I'm blanking. I don't know.
Yes, I think the Icelandic breed does. Actually, I think there's a few of the smaller wool breeds that do. The hair breeds, to my knowledge, are the Katahdin and the Dorset, maybe. And I don't believe either of them have horns, but.
Okay, so your ram is just a big dude, and your vet's like, whoa.
Yeah, he's tall. I mean, I'm only 5'2", but he's, pretty much shoulder level to me with his head just, at a normal height.
Wow.
He's a tall boy. And
That's a big animal, yeah.
they were standing there with their arms crossed, just staring at him and, trying to guess what they thought he weighed, and they ended up deciding without having to put a tape on him because they didn't want to do that. They said he's probably 400, 450 pounds.
Wow, that is a big.
He's huge. I
Yeah.
mean, we had other rams in the past, and they were nowhere near as big as him. He's just massive.
So have you had the hair sheep long enough for them to lose their coat?
Not yet. We just got these guys in, I think, August.
Okay.
There was a local farmer that I had done some, buying and selling with before, and he hit me up and was like, "Hey, I'm going to get rid of my entire herd of sheep. Would you or anybody be interested?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm very interested." So we loaded up our trailer and we went and collected up all of his sheep and just kind of transported a herd as a whole. So that was quite the blessing to not have to gather and build and piece together a herd or flock or whatever you want to call it. And then it was just kind of boom, you're sheep farmers.
It's amazing when the universe provides, isn't it? Well,
Exactly. Absolutely.
the reason I asked if they've had them long enough for them to blow their coats, they shed. I think you know about
Yeah.
this. They shed. And we visited someone who had hair sheep. They raised them. And it was at the time of year when they were blowing their coats. And I swear the whole pasture looked like it had snowed. It was so funny.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I had one over last year, over the winter last year, and she kind of just shed like a dog. It wasn't anything substantial, but having a half a dozen of them this year, I'm sure I'll notice it.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be fun. I think you'll really enjoy it.
They're such sweet critters. We have our first feeder coming back from the butcher. I'm hoping to actually get a phone call today saying that it's ready. So we're super excited to try lamb for the first time. And I mean, we've tried lamb like at restaurants or whatever, but you know how it's different when it's a farm-raised animal. So yeah,
Yeah,
we're quite excited about that.
I love lamb. I hate that you have to kill the lamb to eat the lamb, but I love lamb. I really do. We have it maybe once every couple of years, and every time I make it, I'm like, this is the best, most versatile meat to cook ever.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I get a lot of funny looks, talking about that from, friends and family, because they just picture the tiny little babies I post pictures of going off to slaughter. But it's, 150 pound, 10 month old sheep,
Yeah.
So it's not like this adorable little baby, but it was still, he was one of my babies, so I was a little sad bringing him in, but it's
Yeah.
bittersweet, it's bittersweet.
And it always is. It doesn't matter if it's your chicken or your rabbit or your goat or your sheep or your cow. It's really hard. And
It
I've talked about this a bunch of times with people that, I mean, we had rabbits, 2 summers ago for meat. And we didn't actually get to eat any of them. Very long story, but the butchering did not go the way it was supposed to, and the meat got ruined, and I'm very still bothered by it. But either way, We had three rabbits. We had a buck and two does. One of the does got pregnant, and I mean, obviously on purpose. And we watched her get fatter and fatter and fatter, and then she had nine babies, and I think five of them died due to heat. We ended up bringing her and the babies in the house because it was so hot when they were born. And those little guys grew and grew and grew, and they were beautiful and they were friendly. And I got to hold a baby bunny whenever I wanted to until they got big enough to kick me. And then that was pretty much the time that I was like, whenever you're ready to butcher them, do it. But I'm still going to try. And told my husband and my son that I could not be there when they did it, because all I would do was sob, and that wouldn't make anyone's day any better. I said, once you have them butchered and skinned, no feet, no head, it's just meat, and I can deal with it. And my husband was like, okay. And they brought them in, and we cleaned them up and put them in water and froze them, and then discovered that something went wrong with the butchering. And I don't even remember what was wrong, but it just didn't work. And so they ended up in the trash, and that hurt me more than anything.
Yeah, we used to do meat rabbits. That's one thing, actually, I grew up doing as a kid. You know, at one point my dad had, we had over 100 rabbits, because that's how we were, you know, kind of feeding the family. We sort of did meat chickens and all, but rabbits was really my dad's thing. I mean, he still does rabbits. He's just always really enjoyed rabbits and ducks. Those are his thing.
Yep.
But you know, you really learn what's for you and not for you in your homestead. And rabbits just are not mine and my husband's thing.
Yeah, the rabbits are weird, because some of them are super sweet and some of them are downright mean.
Yes.
One of the does was just mean. We'd reach in there to feed her, and she would try to bite us.
Yeah, we had one like that too. And, you know, I mean, they're fun, but it just wasn't really as, I don't want to say profitable, because we only just do things, you know, for supporting our own family, really. But it just wasn't as, I guess, productive. Yeah. As some other things are, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, like the second or third time she blooded me or blooded my husband, I was like, these rabbits have not given us babies. They did not get the memo that they're supposed to, like rabbits. And do you want to keep doing this? And he was like, no. I said, neither do I. This is not worth the feed to keep doing it. So we just aren't doing it anymore. And I kind of felt bad about it, but I think you're right. I think that you have to try stuff, and if it's not right for you, you just don't do it anymore.
Yeah, you know, there's so much trial and error. That's why I always tell people when they're asking me, you know, like why I have what breeds I do and how I, or why I raise them the way I do. And, you know, you learn over years. You know, like I said, we've only been doing this for 5 or 6 years now. Since we kind of moved out on our own, got our, you know, first little chickens in a little purple painted shed that was, you know, full of old lawn care stuff that got left behind by the previous owner. We threw it all out in a dumpster, got our first chickens, you know, and said, woohoo, let's do this. And now we have completely different chickens, you know. Back then it was just, you know, basic little brown layers, you know. And now we have olive eggers and the black copper marins and all the pretty color little eggs and stuff, you know, for more specialized breeding. They're not the most, like, productive layers when it comes to, like, selling eggs and, you know, getting eggs every day. You know, we have separate layers for that. We have the light Brahmas. And we do Idaho pasture pigs. Like I said, we've had, you know, four different breeds of pig in the past, but these guys, you know, are very docile and not very destructive. They're a slower growing breed, but that was more acceptable to us, should I say, for the temperament. You know, we had other pigs that were mean, but they got to 600 pounds in, you know, no time.
Yeah.
So, and the hair sheep, you know, we like the wool sheep, but the hairs are just, you know, a little bit more economical because we're not in it for the fiber. So, you know, you live and you learn what is best for you and your homestead.
Absolutely. The black copper marin chickens, are they the ones that lay the really reddish colored eggs?
Yes, the super,
Yeah.
super dark ones.
Yeah, they're really
Yeah, they
pretty.
are.
Yep, we ended up with one of those in a batch we bought from somebody, and we didn't know that's what the breed was. And my husband brought in eggs, and there was this really pretty red egg. And I said, "Which one's laying that?" He said, "I don't know."
That is the biggest question on the homestead. We have like 50 or some odd chickens out there, and it's always like, I wonder who laid this one, because wow, you know?
Yeah, we got some chickens that were, they were not laying yet. They weren't babies. And they're pullets, I guess, is the name for it. And it was just a mix from a guy that has chickens. And he had these really pretty, like grayish chickens with tan. And I said, "What are those?" And he said, "I don't know, chickens." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I asked my husband if he could grab one of them because the guy just said, "Pick out whatever chickens you want out of these." And so they had a net, and he got me one of the gray with the tan. And come to find out, it was like a lavender Orpington or something.
Oh, sure.
And I love that chicken. Like, I don't like chickens. I don't want to pick them up. I don't want to touch them. I think they're pretty from a distance. They freak me out if I have to touch them. So anyway, that one just laid like brown eggs, normal light brown eggs, but she was so pretty. And then we picked up a couple more chickens from a friend, and there was this one chicken that didn't look like the other ones. She didn't have a comb. Her face was more flat than the other chickens, and I thought maybe something was wrong with her. And come to find out, she was an Americana, I think is what the name
Oh,
of it was.
yes.
And they lay green eggs,
Yes, I
green,
have a few
but
of those as
light
well.
green bluey eggs. And
Yes.
when she first laid an egg, I was like, "Well, we know who laid that one because she's the only one of that kind in the flock." But she's gone now too. She was fine this summer, and then my husband went out to feed and water the animals, and he was like, "The other chicken died." And I said, "Oddball," because that's what we named her, because she didn't look like any other chickens. I said, "Oddball's dead." And he's like, "Yeah." He said, "She was fine yesterday and she's not now." I was like, "Okay."
Yeah,
So,
sometimes that happens. They're weird little critters.
yeah, weird things happen with animals. You have no idea that there's anything wrong until it's too late to know something was wrong.
Yep, and I mean, prey animals, they always say, really hide their illnesses and pains and stuff like that. So sometimes you never know until it's way too late.
Yeah, and the first time it happens, it's really difficult. Like, we lost a barn cat the first fall we were here, and it was a silver tabby, and I had always wanted a silver tabby as a house cat, but we ended up getting a silver tabby as a barn cat. And we live on a really busy highway. Like, our house is back a ways, but there's semis that go through all the time because it's cornfield land out here. And that cat didn't show up one morning, and I was like, "Where's the silver tabby?" And Kyle was like, "I haven't seen him today." And I thought, "Oh no!" And like later that day, I came out of the bathroom, which is off the kitchen, and as you come out of the bathroom, you're looking right out the picture window over the sink, and I saw a cat in the road, and I was like, "I think I know where our cat is." And he went out and checked, and he came in. He was like, "Yeah, he got hit by a car." And I was sobbing. I was angry and sad at the same time. And I was swearing a blue streak. I won't tell you what I said, but I was like, "Ah, the silver tabby I love so much had to be the first one to go." I was very, very upset. And then we lost the orange tabby that was the silver tabby's brother a month later. The same thing. And I was upset, but I wasn't as upset. And as the years have gone by here, we have lost critters because that's what happens on a farmstead or homestead. And now, when someone comes in to tell me that one of my critters is gone, I'm like, "That's really sad." Because it is. But I'm not so attached now because I've learned to not be.
Yes, that you said that perfectly.
It's always hard. but it's not that kick in the gut thing anymore that it was.
Yeah, you get, I guess, desensitized a bit.
A little bit, yeah. And honestly, grief is something that you live with, you don't get over. And it's
yes.
no different in if it's somebody you love or a farm animal that you love or, I don't know. I grieve for my garden when it gets put to bed in the fall. So it's just people lose things and they gain things and they lose things and they gain things. It's how it works.
Yeah, it's always hardest when it's something that truly brought you joy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. That cat never let me pet him, and that was fine. But I just loved him because I love the silver tabbies. I think that they're beautiful, and I had never had one before. So I was very, very, very bummed out that that was the first one to go.
Yeah, we lost a cat to the road this year, too, and it was really hard because we had rescued some long-haired orange twins that the mom had been hit by a car, and there was like 8 babies underneath this person's shed. Oh. So they gave us 2, and one of them was a female, a long-haired orange female. You know, how rare is that? So they say anyways. But, they both, you know, they were indoor cats until they discovered there was an outdoors. And then they didn't want to come back anymore just because, you know, I guess that's, they felt it in their genes. You know, they were supposed to be outdoor cats.
Yeah.
You know, so they started going out, and we live on a little side dirt road that people like to essentially drag race down. We have, you know, caution, go slow, you know, kids and animals at play, even though our property is completely fenced for, you know, the other animals, the dogs, the kids, but the cats just kind of, cat's a cat. Mm-hmm. And my husband went to work one day and he called me and said that, you know, half a mile down the road was one of the cats, and he thought it was the male, and I was going to go get it until I walked out the door and the male came running at me, just meow, meow, meow. And I'm like, oh my golly, he's coming to tell me, like, you'll never believe what happened, mom, help, you know, and that's when we knew it was the little girl, and really hit my husband hard because those were his cats.
Yeah, it's really tough. Last spring, a stray cat, we're going to say showed up here, but I think someone actually dumped her.
Oh.
And she was 6 months old, long-haired calico, ridiculously long-haired. And she bonded with my son immediately. And he said, I know we don't need another barn cat, but can we keep her? And I was like, well, what else are we going to do with her? And I posted on Facebook and said, if anybody's missing this cat, let us know. But if no one claims her, we're going to keep her. And we ended up naming her Floof because she's so fluffy. You know, F as in Frank, L as in leader, O-O-F, Floof is her name. And we were going to get her spayed because, of course, she wasn't spayed. And she turned up pregnant.
Oh, my goodness.
Than we planned on. And my son was the one who noticed because the cat wanted him and he would pick her up and hold her every day. And he's like, Floof's kind of round in the middle. I think she might have found a friend. And I said, uh-huh. And we watched. And oh my God, by end of August, first September, her belly, she looked like a basketball. So we ended up taking her to the vet because we're taking our dog to the vet anyway. And we were like, we think she's pregnant, but could she not be pregnant? Could something be wrong with her? And the vet tech said, well, it could be a belly full of worms. I said, I think if it was a belly full of worms, she'd look a lot worse because that would be a lot of worms. So they said, well, we can do an x-ray. And I said, how much is that? And she said, $100. And I looked at my husband and he said, why not? Then we know what to expect. And I was like, okay. So they did an x-ray and they brought us the picture on their tablet of the x-ray. And you could see 6 little spines attached to 6 little skulls. And the vet said that she thought there might be 8 because she couldn't tell. So on September, I think, 15th, Floof exploded into 6 kittens. And she did great. She was a first-time mom, and she wasn't even a year old yet. And I was smitten. I was like, oh my god, baby kitties. And they were very pretty. And then she brought them out of the barn at like, I think, 3 weeks old. And their eyes were open and they were stumbling around following her. And a week later, she brought four out of the barn. Not six. And two were gone. We don't know what happened to them. We think maybe an eagle or an osprey or a hawk.
Oh, sure.
So then we were down to four. And we found a home for one of them. Her name around here was Rocky because she looked like a raccoon. She had the rings around her tail. And a nice family adopted her. Her name is now Toast, and she is living her best life. Their kids named her Toast.
Toast.
Then we had three.
Can't give the best cat names.
I know. Then we had three kittens, and we had a orange male, and we had a muted, a dilute calico kitten, looks just like mom, and we had a gray and white one. The tan one, the dilute orange one, the male, ended up dying from a respiratory infection that we actually were treating. He just couldn't fight it. So he's gone. And then the other gray and white one hurt its foot and was also sick with the same respiratory infection, and he didn't make it. So we are now back to three barn cats. We have the black cat male, we have Floof, and we have her daughter Chirp. So yeah, it's been crazy. Like, I've never had kittens from conception to 14 weeks old now, I think it is. Never had a dog of my own in my life. We got a dog a month and a half after we moved in here. She's three now, and she was 8 weeks old when we got her. And I'm going to say this again, I do not recommend anyone get an 8 week old puppy a month and a half, 2 months after you move into a brand new place, situation that you are learning, because it was insanity here. So I'm sorry, that was a long-winded way of saying things happen on the farm.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, your story is not crazy at all. My mom probably slightly hated how many cats we had as a kid, because I'm always a cat person. You know, I love my dogs. We have two Labradors and a livestock guardian dog, but mm-hmm. I'm a cat person. And I found these cats that were on Facebook, and they were just going to be dumped or whatever unless someone took them. So I went and got them, and I brought them home, and she's like, what on earth did you do? And I said, don't worry, I'll find them homes. Because it was a mother and her two kittens that were brother and sister. Yep. And she's like, you need to get rid of the brother, like, now, before you have some problems. So I was like, yeah. My friend's taking him. She's coming to get him tonight. You know, brother was gone. Bing, bang, boom. And, you know, so we just had these two little girls. And, you know, all was well until a couple weeks later, they started to be a little round. And my mom was like, what did you do? You know, so now we have all these little inbred kittens are coming, you know, but uh-huh. Yeah, we had kittens before, and they had a litter of one or two or three, you know. So my mom's like, it is what it is, you know. We'll find them homes, you know.
Yep.
Oh, 2 weeks later, we had 21 kittens born between the two of them.
Wow, that's a lot of babies.
Yeah, there was a 10 and an 11 litter, and my mom was just like beside herself. So We're like, we're out of our wheelhouse here. So we ended up calling up the local Humane Society and saying, like, we need help adopting these. Like, please help us find them homes. And they all found homes instantly because they were adorable little cats. But yeah, so you're not alone there.
Yeah, well, Floof and Chirp will be getting spayed in end of February, first part of March, as soon as I find somebody to do it that isn't going to charge me an arm and a leg, because
oh my God, it's ridiculous.
Spaying barn cats at $300 a piece is a little ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So there's a place called Min Snap in Minnesota that will spay and neuter feral or barn cats. and it's only like $120 per cat. So they're not taking any appointments right now, but I'm going to keep an eye on it. As soon as I see that they are, I'm going to try to get Floof and Chirp into them. And if not, one of the local vets does a barn cat spaying and neutering event in the spring at a lower cost. So I'm going to look into that too, because I feel like a heel saying this, but spending a lot of money on barn cats is not a thing that we want to do, because we could get them spayed and then 2 weeks later they're gone. They've either left on their own, or they've been picked up by a predator, or they get hit by a car, and it's expensive to do this. But we need the barn cats, because otherwise our pole barn would be overrun with mice like it was when we first got here. So
it's a service that's needed, because then you have, you know, hundreds of cats running around. Our local vets and humane societies used to do free spay and neuter for barn cats and feral cats, and, you know, strays, anything you find, whatever, bring it in. They would spay it / neuter it, give it rabies vaccines, dock its ear, send it on its way. Yeah. But they don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I caught a feral cat a couple months ago and called him up and said, hey, I have this little cat. It's an intact male. You know, can I bring it in? They said, oh, we don't do that anymore. Just turn it loose. I called every single vet and everything within 2 hours of a drive from me, and nobody would do it.
Yeah, I think part of that is that everybody and their family member got pets during COVID, and a lot of the vets were just inundated with pets to take care of, to see. And I know here in Minnesota, the shelters were just overrun.
Oh, yes.
A year ago, because people had to go back to work and couldn't keep their pets that they got during COVID. So that might be part of it. I don't know. I'm guessing, but I think so.
Oh yeah. It's a big thing here too. There's all these stray cats running around, and people want to bring them to the shelters, but the shelters say we are over max capacity, because people will drop them off in the middle of the night, just leave them on the doorstep of the shelter, you know, in a cardboard box, and they get there in the morning and say, you know, we'll figure something out, but this is not how you go about this.
This is not a sustainable plan, people. Don't do this. One of the shelters in Minneapolis, I don't know when, it was in the recent past, so within the last couple of months, they had an event where they literally said, if you're looking for a pet, come see us, because we will give them to you. They weren't charging for them.
Ours
they
do that too. The clean out the shelter event.
Yep. And I think that getting a pet from a shelter is a really, really good idea. I think that if you're looking for a pet and you're not heart set on a specific breed, check out the local shelters first, because there are some fabulous animals at the shelters. Now, having said that, when you have friends who have really good dogs who happen to be having a litter, and they say, hey, we have 7 puppies coming, you really might want to jump on that too. That's how we got our dog, and she's fantastic. So, we knew her parents. We knew the people that owned her parents, and fabulous people, fabulous dogs. And I was like, oh, a Daisy Diesel doggy would be great. And my husband was like, get one. I was like, okay. She's a mini Australian Shepherd. So not only is she a good dog, she is a small dog. She's only about 35 pounds, which is a lot easier for all of us to deal with, because we had talked about a Great Pyrenees dog, and then I looked at how big they get, and I went, this place is not going to handle that. I can't handle a dog that big. It's not going to work. I would love to have one. They're big loves, and I think they're great, but not here.
Yeah, we have Labradors, and I've had Labradors my entire life. The ones I have now are my 8th and 9th Labradors throughout my lifetime. And then I was like, well, I'm used to big dogs. Like, how much bigger could one of these livestock guardian dogs be? And she's massive. Like, she makes my Labradors look like a shrimp.
You know, it's just funny. You know, you think you have large dogs and then you see how big they really are.
Yeah,
Big fluffs.
our friends have Great Pyrenees dogs. One's a girl and one's a boy. And the male is the oldest of the two, and he is really friendly. The female is young. She's probably going to be a year old here soon, and she is not friendly at all. She's real skittish with people. And when we went to see them, we met the dogs for the first time, and the male came running over to me, and he's a little shy, but he warms up. And he walked over and bumped into me. You know, bumped his ribs into my thigh. And I was like, "Oh, you are huge." And he nudged my hand, and I was like, "Okay, so you want pets?" So I petted his head, and he sat down and looked up at me like, "Hello." And I reached down and put my hands under his jaw, because that's what I love to do with the big dogs, and scratched him behind his ears. His eyes rolled back in his head, and his tongue dropped out of his mouth. He was like, "Oh, yeah, that's the spot."
Oh yeah, they're so sweet. You know, they look like these big, scary, intimidating dogs. And you know, to some people, it's funny. Ours, her name is Cece, and she. Some people can come in the yard, and she does exactly that. She'll get little zoomies. It's funny seeing a 120-pound dog do zoomies, you know, and just wants attention, belly rubs. And then other people, like we had to get our propane tank filled. And the guy called me because I wasn't home at that moment. I was just, you know, 10 minutes away on my way home. But he called me and he's like, "Yeah, I'm parked outside your driveway because your dog won't let me in." And she was just going nuts. Some guys, I had to put her in the garage because some people are just not okay to her.
Yeah, my dad says always trust your dog.
Absolutely.
Maggie, our dog, like 2 years ago, she would not go off the back steps. She'd been totally fine going out on her lead in the yard to use the bathroom since we got her home. And she was just shaking. She would not step off the back steps. And I could not for the life of me figure out what was going on. There was nothing in the yard, there was nothing around. And so I finally got her to come out in the yard with me. And she was sniffing everything, and the hair on her back was standing up. And so, like a week later, I was talking to my dad and told him about it. And he said, "You probably had a coyote or something walk through the yard." And because she's so young, she didn't know what it was. She didn't know what the scent was. And he said to me, he said, "Mary Evelyn, let me tell you, always trust your dog. They know things we don't know." And I said, "Okay, we noted, Dad. Thank you for the advice, and thank you for explaining this to me." I said, 'cause she was so scared, she didn't know what to do. So
Yeah,
yeah,
you know, sometimes
always
they
just
know
trust.
things. That's why actually we have the ram that we have now. I had another one before this ram, and he was so sweet. And you know, we thought he was just a very, you know, I mean, he would come to you know, when it was food time, but he just wanted to, you know, keep to himself. Other than that, exactly what they say you want in a ram. You know, you don't want one that you feel is going to be invading your space all the time, whatever. So we thought he was great until we brought Cece home, and you know, she was new. She was getting warmed up to things, you know, so she was very timid for a while. And then she really got comfortable and she decided she didn't like that ram. He'd never done anything to us or to her, but if that ram would come near one of us, she would just tear into it, you know, chase it away. And then she'd come back and sit by us. We're like, you know, she knows something about that ram. He may not have done anything to us yet, but she feels as though he's a threat. So we got rid of him and brought this new one in.
Goodness, baby.
That's my 18-month-old. But yeah, so we brought in this new ram and she's perfectly happy with him. She even snuggles up to him in the barn, you know.
Oh,
So I completely agree with your dad there.
yeah. So this has been a really interesting conversation because there's no real focus here except that you are loving what you're doing and you're doing it because you want to be doing it. I had tried to drill down a little bit and find people who are doing specific things. Like I talked to a lady who keeps bees. I talked to a guy last night who grows popcorn of all things.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's fine. I really love when people are very focused in on the one thing that they're doing. that is homestead related, but just having a kind of easy rambling conversation about what it's like to live the way we do has been really fun. So
we're not specific at all.
Yeah,
we have bees, but I know very little about them. Same with sheep, pigs. You know, we're very novice to everything, but just trying it.
Yeah, but you have years to go, so who knows what you'll settle on.
Exactly. That's why we keep saying, you know, we may be doing trial and error now. You know, we may have things for a few months and decide we don't like them, or, you know, start small and then just go nuts with 150 chickens. But, you know, we're learning what suits us. And by the time that we're, you know, at a point where our kids are our age, you know, I'm just excited for where we'll be. You know, yeah. I have no idea where we'll be, but I know we'll be somewhere.
Well, yes, hopefully you will be somewhere alive and kicking. That would be great. All right. So we really went way over. We're at an hour and 30 seconds now. I usually do a half an hour. So thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for the opportunity. It was fun to talk to another homesteader, because I don't know many people that, you know, have similar interests, so I don't really get to talk much. So thanks for listening.
That's kind of why I started this, because we're in the same boat. We don't know a lot of people who are doing the same thing or even remotely close to the same thing. So I was like, hey, I bet there's lots of people out in the world who I talk to over the internet who would be happy to talk to me about homesteading. So that's where this came from.
Yeah, I'm glad you introduced me to it, because I've started listening to some of your podcasts, and I just find it cool gathering other people's knowledge and opinions, and, you know, so I'll definitely be following you along for years to come.
All right, awesome. Thank you so much, Emily. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.